Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to the Beth Wee Radio Hour, an hour dedicated to helping you find connection so you can live your best life.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Beth Walsh Erickson. I'm in the studio today with my partner in crime, Lee Kimball. How are you doing today, Lee?
I am well, Beth. Nice to be here once again with you.
Nice to be here, too. And we have a guest in the studio with us because many of you listen to me every week and you hear me talk about different ways to help your life get back on track. You know, sometimes life is going great and something will come up and trigger maybe an old memory or something, and we can hit the skids and we can go downhill. Sometimes it's just something that recurs, something that just comes back. And in some of the workshops, and many of you who have attended know that I suggest a couple different kinds of therapy if you need some deeper work. And we're blessed in our little community down here in the Vero Beach, Florida area. If you're listening from around the country, look it up what I'm going to talk to you about. But in our little area, we have somebody who's pretty gifted with one of the means of getting well. And so I invited Dr. Andrew Dobo. He's a licensed psychologist at Collaborative Counseling Center in Sebastian, Florida. And he's the author of a new book. It's called Unburdening Souls at the Speed of Thought. And I've known Andy for many years because I went to him many years ago for myself to do this new, it's rather a new thing in psychology. It's called EMDR. And it stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. So welcome, Andy Dobo.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, we're really thrilled to have you in the studio today because oftentimes I suggest treatment protocols for people, and they're not sure what they're about. So I thought it would be great for you to come in and talk to us today. So today we're going to be talking about this EMDR. Those of you have heard me talk about it for years. Now you're going to get a little bird's eye view from somebody who really knows what it is. Andy, EMDR, I could hardly say it. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. What is it? Can you give us a little, you know, that?
Yeah, sure. We say EMDR because it's such a kind of convoluted name.
It's a long name.
It's easier.
That's the academic side of my field.
Yeah, that's right.
So it does sound for, it stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and it's a very different therapy in that you don't really talk. Everyone thinks, well, I'm going to go to counseling, I'm going to go to therapy, I'm going to talk. I mean, we do talk to prepare for the EMDR session, but during the EMDR session, there's really not much. There's no talking.
No conversation.
Yeah, and there's the eye movement. They discovered, the woman who discovered this is Francine Shapiro in California in 1987. She was given a diagnosis of breast cancer when she was in graduate school. She was just a young woman. It's a frightening diagnosis now, but in 1987, it was very frightening.
Right.
And she sort of tells the story that she was doing some research looking for her dissertation subject. And she read a little bit about this eye movement thing that helped people relax for some reason. So after she got the news about from the doctor's office, she said, I literally went for a walk in the park across the street from the doctor's office, sat on a bench and just started to cry. But then she remembered too about the eye movements. So she started to move her eyes back and forth to see if this would help. And after about 15 minutes of this, 10 minutes, she was no longer crying. She never cried again about having cancer. In fact, she wasn't even afraid. So any sort of visceral response from this traumatic news had just vanished. And so that was the discovery. And it was really the right person at the right time because she's a really good researcher. Mm-hmm. And she did a great job researching it. And the first group of fellas that they did the research on were Vietnam veterans who were having flashbacks.
Yes.
And they would do this bilateral stimulation, which is just your eyes move back and forth.
Like a windshield wiper back and forth. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. You keep your head still and you just move the pupils of your eyes while you're thinking of an upsetting moment in your life.
Okay.
And then it sort of jump starts that process. So you sort of go back into that memory because EMDR activates thoughts, feelings, images, memories, and body sensations. So you have an experience in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's intense, very intense, and sometimes not so much.
Now, is this also an experience, the original experience, but that just wasn't processed originally?
Exactly. And the idea is, like, if we take a veteran, and I don't want people to think that this is just for big traumas where you see your buddy die in war. I mean, if you're five and you're in kindergarten and you love school and you love your teacher and you love your friends and the work, and then one day your teacher has a bad day and he yells at you and screams at you for something that you've done, your life changes in that moment. In that moment, teachers can be dangerous.
Not safe.
Yeah.
They yelled at me for 12 years.
I know, but people don't think, they'll come and see me and say, Doc, I don't want to tell you what happened in kindergarten. I want to tell you that, look, I'm having trouble with my boss, and I don't know what to do about it. So they sort of poo-poo that, but that moment is when the driving force of EMDR, the main thing that it does is it takes a negative belief, like, I don't matter. Like, if you're the child of an alcoholic, alcohol matters in that house.
Right.
Children, they come second, third, fourth, they're down the line there. So they get this message very early on that I don't matter. And so that cognition is born. And those aren't just words. Every decision that they make, every person that they encounter, every person that they befriend or become, you know, married to or whatever, is someone that's going to perpetuate that idea that they don't matter. So they just surround themselves with people that will treat them like they don't matter. Mm-hmm. So they put everyone ahead of them.
Because that's their belief. So if you treat them like they matter, they're uncomfortable with you.
Exactly.
They move away from you.
And
I get it.
That's right. And there's, it's just a kind of a profound thing. We don't do what we think we're making decisions because this is what I want. This is what you think you fall in love with someone because, oh, they're interesting, they're this, they're that. But there's this underlying kind of insidious reason also that is, oh, this person will treat me like I don't matter.
Right.
Because that's familiar, because I've been doing that my whole life. I know how to do that. But you don't say that, you don't look for that, you don't think that. But that is it's a template that starts early on and is just perpetuated throughout the lifespan. And it happens with every one of my patients. That's my job, is to take this I don't matter thing, and EMDR will process all these memories where you were treated like you don't matter, and it makes room for this moment where I do matter.
Right.
And it kind of ties into Beth, and one of the things Beth and I speak of frequently is, and she calls them hand-me-down beliefs, but beliefs that we carry through our lives that we never evaluate and say, you know, and maybe at one point it was accurate, but does it pertain in the here and the now?
Right. Well, that's like in the, in one of the little things I've written, I wrote about a fairy tale, and it's about a woman who grows up with a pet dragon, and the dragon is supposed to protect her. And as she grows, and the dragon grows too. So by the time she's a young woman, she's up in the turret of this castle and she can't leave because the dragon won't let her leave. And the knight comes to slay the dragon so that she can leave the castle. And the knight, we call the knight Truth. And
I call it EMDR.
Oh, wait till you hear what the dragon's called.
No, go ahead. but the dragon, I say the dragon may come back to life too, because that's the reality of it. It because it comes in different places. And so I have a question about that. So you say you have the belief that you don't matter, and you get it treated with the EMDR. Maybe you got it somewhere else later in a different place, or maybe you got it in a different, you know, like a finagled way. Do you have to do it again to get that?
Well,
sometimes, or?
Well, the way that we begin is with a timeline of upsetting events that a person has had. So we go through this timeline.
So you like to create a history for the people.
Yes. So
I gotcha. Okay.
And EMDR, you start with a memory, but you only stay with that memory for 15 or 20 seconds. You sort of let go. And EMDR, but with a stimulation, takes you out of your intellect, out of your ego, and you just start to see your life flash in front of your eyes, all these I don't matter moments.
Okay.
So, and in a way, it's kind of your brain is defragging itself. It's taking all this negative stuff that you've kind of latched onto and sending it where it belongs. And then there's a moment. This is why I do this work, because it's almost like you watch somebody come alive right before my very eyes. Because when it shifts to, that was really a crappy thing that they did. I matter. I deserve better than that. Like, they'll say something like that. I don't tell them that. They have to say it.
They came to that conclusion.
By doing EMDR. And then they're not just saying that. They believe it in every cell in their body. They will not let anyone else treat them like they don't matter. Sometimes they are a little more angry than they've been in maybe mm-hmm. ever in their life. So there's some other things that have to be navigated
right.
and help them. And that's like the six-stage thing. The first stage is like avoidance, you know, denial. They don't have a problem. With EMDR, the second stage is you have to surrender to EMDR. You have to let go. You can't, if something wants to come up, you have to let it come up. You can't, if you're going to push it back down, then you haven't surrendered and I can't really help you. You right. got to just let whatever comes up, come up. The third is the EMDR piece, which is a dismantling of the cognition. I don't matter. I'm not good enough.
Right.
Once you dismantle that, there's a period of chaos and confusion that sets in. Because mm-hmm. people who have not mattered in their entire life, they have no idea how to matter. But they know they can't go back to not mattering because their eyes are wide open now. They see friends who they thought were friends but are taking advantage of them now. They're not friends. So they try to go back. There's like a retreat sometimes. And then they sort of start to get an idea of how one might live a life where they do matter or they feel good enough. So I always tell people, I said, you know, you got to be up for this because EMDR changes the way you see the world, the way you engage the world, and the way you allow the world to engage you. And that's right. all going to change.
Right.
Awareness and perception.
Yeah. I talk a lot about a kaleidoscope where you twist something and it's a whole new picture. And you never get that old picture back. It's a new picture. Once awareness comes in,
it's not always pretty.
No.
But yeah, awareness, it's not always easy.
To acquire the awareness, we have to start with an open mind.
That's right. But we're going to start. So we're talking today with Dr. Andrew Dobo. We lovingly call him Andy. Andy Dobo.
I never called him Andy. I always called him Doctor.
There you go. And we're talking about EMDR, and it's eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. And it's a way to let go of old hurts. We're going to take a really short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about it. Thanks for tuning in. Stay with us.
Welcome back.
We're here. It's Beth Erickson in the studio with Lee Kimball and Andy Dobo today. We're talking about EMDR. It's a wonderful therapy. It's a integrative psychotherapy approach that treats trauma. And trauma can be big or small. As Andy was saying earlier, he might be working with a Vietnam vet, and he might be working with someone who at age 5, dad went out and didn't come back, and the divorce was started, and they didn't understand it. So it's all perception. It's trauma as perceived by the individual. And
trauma is personal.
It is. And we were talking kind of before we started to break, but it sounds like there's a set of protocols, and you keep talking about six stages. Could you mm-hmm. talk more about those for us? What are the six stages of EMDR therapy?
Well, I've sort of observed them, and that's in my book, but there's nowhere else that
okay.
these six stages exist.
Okay, so this is...
Except it's my 12 years of observation,
well,
and it seems like this is...
So it's a Doboism.
It is a Doboism, and I'll tell you, when I tell my clients this, and also a lot, I've supervised... EMDR people whose therapists who want to be certified, and you know, online there's listservs and things. And when you tell people that look, there's a beginning to this, and there's a middle, and there's an end. So in a way, I'm giving them a map. But when people come in, and before I was telling them that, they didn't understand what was happening. They didn't. It's painful. Sometimes mm-hmm. they'll go home and they'll be more upset than when they came. And how long do I have to do this? Is this ever going to end? But if you lay it out in these six stages. They're comforted.
They're going to get through it.
And also, I like to work with dreams as well. And each stage has its own kind of theme, and I can often tell where they're moving to the next stage. And even though the dream might have been a nightmare, to me, it's a good dream. Like in stage three, when we're dismantling the old belief.
Well, start with stage one. Let's go slow okay. for the people listening, because we talked about it briefly, and it was quick. So let's go through the six stages as you see them. So these are six stages as seen by Dr. Andrew Dobo.
Right.
And
well,
they're in the book. At the book, just in case you want to write it down, Unburdening Souls at the Speed of Thought. And you can buy the book at andrewdobo.com, right?
Yeah, or Amazon, or Amazon. Anywhere on your iPad.
Yeah, it's available, but it's easy everywhere. To get. But so let's talk about these six stages that you identified.
Okay, and then just one other thing about the stages is it was really an insight I had about, I don't know, it's the death of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I sort of noticed that he goes through these six stages in his death and resurrection. Because the first is avoidance. And I never really, I don't want to get too Christian-y here, but even if it...
Yeah, not everybody listening is religious.
Right, and you don't have to be.
But everybody listening pretty much understands that we see that there's a spiritual nature and that we have to serve it, so...
Yeah, well, as I was, you know, thinking about the avoidance piece, I never really gave this sense a thought. You know, if you're a Christian, you know, Easter stuff, Christ is walking, this cup passed for me. And you... That's part of the story, you know. I don't want to really go through this crucifixion.
So when you say avoidance and you're mentioning the Christ, you're mentioning when he said, pass this cup, if it's your will, God, let this cup pass away from me.
Right, and you want to...
And that's avoidance. And we all do that.
Right.
No, don't make me do this.
I don't want to deal with this.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't make me go
And
there.
Christ didn't want to either, but that seems like a human statement for our benefit. Yeah. I think he knew he was not going to be able to walk away.
This isn't going to work out well.
Right.
But we say, I don't want to go here.
Right.
Because it's scary and it may be painful.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, if you spent 40 years not mattering and I'm telling you, oh, that was wrong. That's a hard thing to swallow.
Right.
And then the second is surrender, you know. And with EMDR, you don't talk. And the instruction is you don't try to make anything happen once we start, but you don't prevent anything from happening.
There's our open mind.
Yeah, you have to just accept, surrender. And if you know that...
I have a thing about surrender.
Yeah.
I break words apart, my poor friends. And now my friends are starting to do it. It's kind of fun, actually. Now I have people doing it around me, people that come to all my workshops.
Oh, my gosh, it's contagious.
It is. Somebody was saying, I took this word apart. But surrender, S-U-R, sir, means over and above. And render means to make. So when I teach, I say, surrender means over and above that which I could make on my own. So when I surrender, I'm like waving the white flag, but it's not in defeat. It's in, I'm going to take what you give me.
Exactly.
I'm going to take what you give me because I can't do it.
And as with some of the biggest challenges that you and I teach about, you know, the term surrender to win frequently comes up.
Right.
Okay. But it's not about winning.
No.
No.
This is true. It's about freedom.
Right.
Well, I got to say, yeah, it is though, Andy, for a lot of people that we work with, because our mission, we started this trying to help people that have been impacted by addiction, whether their own addiction or the addiction of someone they love.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardly anybody in the world now who doesn't have somebody they love or themselves that struggles with addiction.
I agree.
Of some form or another.
I agree, of course.
Yeah, and it's tough stuff. So we're going to start with this. The first thing is avoidance. And it's like if you spend 40 years not mattering, you may want to avoid making a change. You're used to it. It's kind of like you're in your rut, you're used to your rut.
Exactly.
Okay, so the next stage is to surrender. And basically, it's pretty simple what you're saying. You're not going to prevent anything from happening.
Right.
You're just going to,
with the flow.
I'm going to accept and be here and let this happen. Okay.
And then the third is actually the EMDR, bilateral stimulation, moving the eyes. And we use also tappers. Because the original research was with eyes, but you can use headphones, beeps, or tactile stimulation. It doesn't have to
when
be
I
eyes.
When I did it with you, I had two little paddles in my hand, and went bzzzt on one hand, and then bzzzt in the other hand, and it was like doot, doot.
And when I did it with you, you had this really cool light bar.
I still do.
He has the light bar, too. I did the light bar to watch, to go.
Took me back to the 70s.
Well, to keep your head straight, and then to make your eyes follow the lights, and they just go back and forth.
And that was in conjunction with the...
And then the bzzzt. In my hands. And you're on the radio. Okay, those of you listening on the radio, they're going, what is she talking about? But that's my little sound effects thing. But it's like a pulsating little paddle in your hand.
A little vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a cell phone going off alternately in your in either hand.
Sort of. And while at the same time, your eyes are just your head is straight, but your eyes are moving back and forth. So that's the third The third phase is actually...
It's the work.
Okay.
It's either taking, you know, the traumas or the flashbacks and all in the service of, dismantling the cognition. And then the fourth stage, usually after you dismantle the cognition and they gain insight, then they're confused.
Okay.
And sometimes there's some other symptoms that sort of set in. And that would be, you know, the Jungians would call that... a period of creative introversion, like everything sort of shuts down, and that's okay, because they need to do some introspection about, okay, that I need to change. What do I want my life to be? What is this next chapter going to be? It's going to be healthy, and it's going to be their more of the authentic self, I tell them. But they sort of have to figure that out on their own. And then the fifth stage would be like a rebirth, where they sort of have these moments where they value themselves. They might stand up for themselves or find themselves saying things that they wouldn't say. And it's slow. And then sometimes there's a retreat back to the old way. Almost always they try to go back to not mattering, but they find that they can't.
Because once they've seen it.
Once the awareness is there.
It's there.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We talk about, I don't know if you've heard me. I probably told you when I saw you, but I did this thing when my kids were little. I had them around a round coffee table, and I put plastic over it, and I had all their friends over, and their parents, some of the parents, the parents thought I was like some nutcase. Okay, we're going over to Erickson's house, watch out, because you never know what she's going to come up with. But I had all the kids kneeling around the coffee table, and I gave them all a tube of toothpaste. And I gave a prize for whoever could squeeze all the toothpaste out of the tube the fastest. And then
the grand prize was.
And then the grand prize was who could get the toothpaste back in the tube the fastest. And these kids were trying. They were trying, man. And they said that the final thing was we can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. And I'm like, yeah, it's like your words. Once they're out, you can't take them back. And it's like awareness.
It's awareness.
Once you've seen it, you don't get to not see it.
Right.
You don't get to not see it. I see alcoholics. Addicts,
drink away the awareness.
Food addicts try to go back to once they know what recovery feels like and what love feels like and what connection feels like, and they go back to the old lifestyle. It's hard. I think they have in a 12 step. I think in the 12 step, one of the people told me they say something like, a head full of AA and a belly full of beer doesn't mix well or something like that. Yeah. You know, they say something like
that. Absolutely.
And that's probably true. What they're saying is once I'm aware. So that's what this fifth step is, rebirth. Moments where they stand up for themselves and they try to retreat back to what they knew as the old comfort, the old dirty diaper, so to speak.
Right, because it's the devil they know other than this unknown thing. And the unknown is terrifying.
Okay.
You know? And then the sixth is, it's just the... assimilating the new self.
Okay.
So that would be renewal or whatever you want to call it. That I think most of that work happens outside of my office. And
outside of your office?
Huh? Yeah, I mean, we get to stage five, and then it starts to feel more stable, and then they're kind of on their way. And they
walking in the new shoes that they've, you know, that they've decided are more comfortable than the old ones.
Right.
So... Okay, so let me see. We got just a few. I'm going to run through these real quick because we're going to take our halftime break in a little bit.
Go.
Okay, so the six stages, according to Andy Dobo, these are just from his.
As Andy sees it.
That's right.
It is. It's as Andy sees it.
And you're in good company.
Well, you've seen it in other areas, but okay.
Yeah.
Number one was avoidance. If you spent 40 years not mattering, you may avoid the wanting to do something about it. Number two, surrendering. Okay, you choose not to prevent it. Number three, the work, EMDR, allowing the flashbacks, dismantling the cognition. Four, confusion, shutting down for introspection. What does healthy look like? Five, rebirth, moments where you stand up for yourself or others and you try to retreat back to the old self sometimes, but you keep coming back. And the last one, renewal, the truth in your life. It's a good thing. We'll be back in a little bit. Stay tuned.